And I want to welcome you and wish you a very good morning. You're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. I'm Catherine Davis, the host of this program. Today is a very interesting day. It's an important day for those who are paying attention to their spiritual cultivation. And it's an opportunity, really, for us to make a deeper connection and to make a sustainable connection to our inner being. Some might think of as higher self. Other might think of as, you know, quantum alignment. And some may think in terms of just connecting to their soul, connecting to the trueness of their being. And today's date, you know, December 12th, is like a portal into a opening and opportunity. It actually goes from the 12th to the 21st. A couple of weeks ago, we had Sergio Magana on the air, and he spoke about this time period in relation to the Aztec and Mayan calculation of their calendars and the shift of the ages in which we live. And we are really at another level, another step in that developmental stage. It started with the opening in 2012 during the same period from the 12th to the 21st, which is like the solstice. And there was a graduation of sorts where we moved from a timeline that would lead us into a destructive future into a timeline that gave us the opportunity to transform our beings, transform the planet, and move forward to our fullest potential. And then in this interim period, we have been going through a kind of a debriefing, a releasing, going deep into ourselves and churning up all the negativity, all the pain, all of the anxieties. And so these last 2 years for many have been very challenging. And now we're going into this next stage in which we can have a very deep and sustainable connection to that part of our being that really has such an expansive insight into our existence that they become a real ally in how we can live our lives. And that being the case, I feel it's important that we begin to look at what we're doing in terms of our making that connection. And I'm going to share with you some excerpts from a recording by Adya Shanti. And he is a very well-renowned meditation teacher. And we're going to be sharing from his book, True Meditation, a recording. And in this first segment, we're going to hear True Meditation begins with resting in the natural state and discovery of self-inquiry. And this will give us a chance to understand what it is we need to be doing during this time. So I want you to stay tuned for this segment, and we'll be back following.
And so in True Meditation, we're starting from the foundation of allowing everything to be as it is, which we actually start from the natural state. So in True Meditation, we're not moving towards the natural state or trying to create the natural state. We're actually starting at the natural state from the very beginning. That to me is True Meditation. And that's what I began to discover all those years ago when I started to let go of the meditator, the controller, and started to sit down and simply allow everything to be as it is. And what I started to realize very quickly was that the peace and the silence and stillness that I was trying to attain was actually already there. and all I had to do was stop trying to attain it. All I had to do is sit down and allow my experience to be as it was. So like most people, sometimes I sat down and I felt very good. I felt peaceful. Sometimes when I would sit down to meditate, I would be agitated. Sometimes I'd be upset. Sometimes I'd be sort of anxious. Sometimes I'd be sad. Sometimes I'd be happy. So I would feel all the different various human emotions. But what I realized is as I would sit down and actually allow my experience to be as it was and make no effort to change it, that this underlying natural state of being started to rise into consciousness. This uncontaminated, unmanufactured state of consciousness would start to arise very simply and very naturally. And this was what I would call a very innocent state of consciousness because it wasn't derived from effort and from discipline. And another thing that I started to realize is that this natural state, our natural state, is not an altered state of consciousness. So many people associate meditation with altered states of consciousness. And this is also a profound misunderstanding about the potential of meditation. I say potential in terms of spiritual awakening, to the realization of what you and everything actually is, the oneness of all. Is it we're taught or we assume that to perceive everything as one and to perceive yourself as one and not separate is itself an altered state of consciousness. And yet it ends up that it's just the opposite. That to perceive everything as one is not an altered state of consciousness. It's an unaltered state of consciousness. It's the natural state of consciousness. By comparison, everything else is an altered state of consciousness. You see, so when we think of meditation, we must also start to let go that enlightenment itself is an altered state of consciousness that I'm going to sustain. Because a lot of meditators know if you meditate hard enough and long enough, you will occasionally enter into altered states of consciousness. There's all sorts of happiness is an altered state of consciousness. Sadness is an altered state of consciousness. Depression is an altered state of consciousness. And of course, then there's all the mystical states of consciousness. Merging with the cosmos is an altered state of consciousness. Having the feeling that your consciousness expands is an altered state of consciousness. There are many, many, many varieties of an altered state of consciousness. And most people in their mind, they think enlightenment is some altered state of consciousness. This is a profound misunderstanding. Enlightenment is the natural state of consciousness, the innocent state of consciousness, that state which is uncontaminated by the movement of thought, uncontaminated by control and manipulation of mind. This is what really enlightenment is really all about. And so we cannot come upon this truth of our nature through manipulation. We cannot move beyond what I call the false identity, the egoic identity, through trying to change it. We can only start to allow consciousness to wake up from its identification with thought and feeling and body and mind and personality by allowing ourselves to rest in the natural state from the very beginning. So I want to talk about meditative self-inquiry. After the foundation of meditation, as I talked about in the last talk, which is allowing everything to be as it is in the deepest and most simple way, that once this foundation is laid, that we actually have some taste, some experience of what it's like to allow our experience to be as it is, and some experience that when we allow everything to be as it is, that there's a natural state of peace and stillness that starts to occur within our experience. Once we've had started to experience that, even in a very rudimentary way or simple way, then the next element of meditation really comes into play, which is a very important and a very overlooked part of the spiritual path, and that is meditative inquiry. Now, if we just left it at meditation, at allowing everything to be as it is in a deep, deep way, which can reveal a simple and ever-present state of peace, as profound as that is, and as freeing as it can be if we actually let it go to a very deep level, it can also lead us into a state of sort of spiritual dryness or spiritual inactivity or a certain sort of inner disengagement. And so there's this other aspect of spirituality that's extraordinarily important. That's what I call inquiry. And inquiry is a way in which we're using the energy of the mind, of our sort of natural state of curiosity. We're using the energy of spiritual yearning itself in a way that can cultivate and lead to radical insight, insight into the nature of our own being. I like to tell the story of how I came across meditative inquiry. In many senses, it was very spontaneous. It was almost sort of a mistake. Nobody really ever taught me about meditative inquiry directly, and nobody really even suggested that I do it. It came actually naturally out of years of spiritual practice and meditating, and I realized at one point that I had these questions that I think lots of people have about their practice, about their spirituality, what life is about. My questions were actually fairly basic. It was like, what is surrender? I'd heard a lot about surrender, and I just thought, what is surrender really? What is it really? And what is meditation? What is it really? I've been doing it for whatever, years, and what is it really? And of course, they ultimately led to, well, who am I really? So I noticed that I had these questions running around in my mind, and I was looking for a way that I could actually engage with really deep questions that I had. And so the way this inquiry came to me is I found myself going to coffee shops in the evening after work, and I would start with a question. And I would take a piece of paper and a pen in hand, and I would just start to write about the question as if I was talking to somebody else, because I found that we are always the best in transmitting what we know when we're almost teaching it to somebody else. That's when we're at the best as far as how we explain things. So I would sit down and write as if I was going to tell it or teach it to somebody else. And the agreement that I made with myself was I was not going to write a single word unless I knew in my experience that it was accurate and true. And so I would just take a topic, say, what is surrender? And I'd start to write on it. And then, as I said, every sentence I would not complete until I felt that that sentence was true, that I wasn't in any way speaking outside or beyond my own experience. And I would write about it, and then I'd write the next sentence and the next sentence and the next sentence. And what I found was that in a relatively short period of time, I'd always write myself right up to the point of the end of my knowledge, of what I knew about the subject that I was investigating. I found that usually within 2 or 3 handwritten pages at the very most, I would write myself right up to the edge of what I knew. And I would find inside myself the limitation of my own knowledge. And so I would kind of come up to this inner wall, and I would feel it. Not only in my mind, I could feel it in my body. I would know, this is it. This is as far as my own experience goes. And I would also sense that I had not gotten to the bottom of what my question was. So I would literally sit there with my pen in hand and a cup of coffee in the other hand, and I would refuse to write a word unless I knew that it was true. And so sometimes I'd sit right at that place for many minutes, sometimes half an hour, sometimes 2 hours, but I would not write the next word until I knew it was true and it was accurate. And what I found was by staying at that place, the only way to move beyond, to get to a deeper experience, a deeper knowing, a deeper answer, which is I had to hold the question. I had to know where my the edge of my knowledge was, and feel it in my mind and even in my body, and just hold it there, stay at that threshold. Not think about it, not to go into a lot of philosophizing in my mind, but literally almost kinesthetically and physically hold that boundary between what I knew and what was beyond what I knew. And what I found was by holding that boundary, feeling it, sensing it, but also knowing that I wanted to move beyond it, that eventually the next word would come or the next sentence would come. And so I'd write it down. Sometimes it would be a half a sentence, and then I would know right in the middle of that sentence, I hit the boundary again. And so I'd stop again, and I'd wait, and I'd hold the boundary. And I found through doing this that eventually I would go through sort of this mysterious limitation, this mysterious wall of what I knew, and I would move beyond it. And when I'd move beyond it, I'd know, because all of a sudden everything would start to flow again. I would start to write things that I never knew that I knew. And all of a sudden, this deeper wisdom would just come out, and I'd be writing it down, and eventually it would reach a conclusion. Now, these sort of writings would never, I think the longest I ever wrote was probably 7 or 8 handwritten pages. So they weren't long dissertations, because I was trying to make them the shortest, most succinct expressions of what I knew. And by the end of them, what I found, number one, I found that the question had disappeared, which was the most important thing. But what I found in the end, after doing quite a few of these over many months, I found that the answer to every question was ultimately the same answer. By the time I had come to what I thought the answer to every question I could ever come up with was exactly the same answer. And the answer that we all have to come to ourselves, but for me, what the answer that I kept coming to was, I am. That was the answer. What is surrender? And I found, I am surrender. Surrender isn't something I do. Surrender isn't an act that I perform. Surrender is an expression of my own truest being. So no matter what question I found by the very end of it, I got to this, not the answer in the mind, but this living sense that it all ended in I am. I can't explain that sort of intellectually, but it was a revelation that everything ended in the same place. And so that was really how I came upon this sort of form of inquiry. And once I realized how to do it through writing and on paper, eventually I let go of the writing and the paper, and I realized that I could do the same sort of investigation without writing it down. Writing it down had a certain practical value, because it shows you what you know and you don't have to keep spinning in your mind. But later I found that I could do that without writing it down, and that sort of formed the basis of meditative self-inquiry that I teach today. In fact, sometimes I do suggest that people do this as a sort of written form or written practice if they're drawn to do it. And other people, I tell them that it's also not necessary that you write it down, but it is necessary that we hold a focus, that this is done with energy and focus and sincerity. We really have to want to know to do this effectively. It's not a play thing. It's something where we really have to want to know.
And that was Adyashanti, Adyashanti, Adyashanti. And you can find a lot of his work in any bookstore, or if you want to check out Sounds True, you can find out more about Adyashanti. And we were listening to a segment from True Meditation, and it's called True Meditation Begins with Resting in the Natural State. And we also played Discovery of Self-Inquiry. You heard some music behind this, and that was an accompaniment by Nadi, And the piece was called The Soul Depends on Love. And it's from his CD, The Triumph of Love, Meditations on Divine Love. And I'm sure you can find that. His name is spelled N-A-D-I, Nadi. The Soul Depends on Love. And I really wanted to follow up with a response in the sense that I'm really encouraging you to take some time every day, especially between now and the solstice around the 21st, and cultivate your spiritual practice. It's not difficult, really. And one of the reasons I wanted to share this particular piece with you, because it really tells you that it's just about being yourself, allowing yourself to just be at ease with who you are, without questions, without judgment, and just open up to your inner being and allow that communication to unfold. And as that happens, you will begin to receive either direct communication, insights, or some form of communication that can be expressed through creativity. I know very often when I go into a meditative state, I come out with affirmations. I also do a lot of writing. I do drawing. I have a tendency to draw pictures and charts and graphs that really document the makeup of the being, of the full measure of our being. And we are really quantum. We're not just the physical beings we see in the physical world. And we have all of this going on. And one of the things that I've discovered in this process is that when I was moving through the world, maybe last week or last year or maybe even 10 years ago, when I wasn't really yet making that connection to my inner being, I felt that I was walking through the world, and in retrospect, it's almost as if I were just a shell. You know, I had a body, I was walking around, I was interacting, had relationships, but I felt very empty inside. And I was always looking for that interface of something around me to fill the emptiness that I felt. So that may have been a relationship. That may have been even what drove me to meditation and spirituality. It could be trying to find satisfaction in work. So all these ways in which I was looking outside of myself to find who I truly am. And through this whole process of meditation and assimilating the quantum nature of being, I feel now that I have real content, real substance, that there's something to draw upon. So I don't see the spiritual world as being outside or somewhere out there. It is the fullness of who I am on the inside. And this is what I'm encouraging you to do, because right now we're in a very special activation, celestial activation, that allows for that opening to take place. And so, for instance, the meaning of number 12 is independent creative expression, and the meaning of number 21 is cooperative creative expression. So we're looking at the inner or the self, the independent self, and the cooperative or the unified self. And so these numbers symbolize the bringing together of our, what we think of as our own individual being, with the quantum nature in a union of soul. And that's really what this whole termed ascension process is about. It's not about ascending to another realm. It's about integrating the fullness of who we are. And so I really want to encourage you to engage in a meditative process, in a spiritual process, It doesn't have to be anything traditional. It could be listening to the music that you enjoy. It could be sitting in nature. It's a little chilly these days, so you'd want to dress warm. It may be just sitting in your own home and finding a quiet time for yourself. And just allow the communication, the opening of that part of you that is really longing to have that direct communication. It's the part of us from which we receive our inspiration and we receive our guidance. But usually we have to sort of grab onto that through our intuition and through our sensitivities in that way. But in this time period, there's an opening and a thinning of any separations or any veils. And if you allow, there can be an absolute unification so that you would become actually quantum in the sense that you would be able to really see beyond the limitation of our, you know, so-called three-dimensional physical world. And you'll be able to have insight into your potentials and move through to realize those potentials. So it's a very empowering time for us. And I want to encourage you to do that. And I'm going to share one of these affirmations, meditations, incantations that I received through one of these processes of meditation. And it comes through Raphael, the divine ray. You could think of it as Tahuti or, you know, it's really just a beautiful expression of self-healing. And it's designed for you to repeat to yourself as often as you need or desire. I am that I am of divine origin and purpose. I cleanse my being. I cleanse my field of all obstacles and adverse energies with the power of the emerald ray. I breathe the emerald from the center of my heart into and through the particles of my physical body and the energies of my thoughts and emotions. The emerald rises like dew in the morning to form a field around me, a field that repels all outside adversities and attracts the radiance of divine will, divine healing, and divine being. And so it is. And the emerald is the color of the heart, green, the color of the heart, and healing. So when we meditate that color and radiate it through our system, it helps us to transform anything that could be creating an obstacle to our union of divine being. We'll be back in a moment. I want you to stay tuned as we listen to some station announcements. And I want to welcome you back, and you're listening to Heart of Mind Radio over PRN.FM. I'm Catherine Davis, and we're going to go to another segment by Adya Shanti, and we're going to be listening again from True Meditation, and we're going to be hearing a piece called Who is Aware and Transcendent Recognition, and we'll be back in a few moments after you've listened to this. And I'll invite you to call and join in the conversation. So stay tuned for Adya Shanti.
So generally we think, unconsciously in our minds, maybe there is awareness, but we think, I am aware. That I'm the one that's aware, that awareness is something that belongs to me, that there is some entity called me who is aware. And when we start to investigate this meditatively, quietly, simply, we also start to see that while there is awareness, that we can't find the I or the me who is aware. That we start to see that this is an assumption that the mind has been taught to make, that I am the one that's aware. And then when you turn inside and look for who's aware, what is aware, you can't find it. There's just more awareness, that there isn't a me or an I who is aware. And so in this way, we're still subtracting our identity through this deep investigation, through looking at what we're not. We're actually pulling our identity out of thought, feeling, persona, ego, body, mind. We're actually pulling our identity back out of the exterior elements of our experience, back into its essential nature. And we finally get back to awareness itself. And then we encounter the primary assumption. As I said before, the primary assumption is, I am the one that's aware. And then we investigate that. And as we investigate it, not in our minds, but in our experience, time and time again, we cannot find out who it is that's aware. Where is this I that's aware? And at just this moment, when we start to realize that we cannot find an entity called me who owns or possesses awareness, it can start to dawn on us, inside of us, that maybe we ourselves are awareness itself. That awareness isn't something we own. Awareness isn't something we possess. Awareness is actually what we are. Now this, for some people, for most people, will sound very radical. Only radical because we are so used to identifying ourselves with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our egos, with our bodies, and with our minds, and our beliefs. We're actually taught to identify with these things, which is actually painful. It's painful to identify with thought, especially when thought turns negative or vicious. And so, through our investigation, we start to see that there's something that stands before thought, before personality, before beliefs, that we're calling for the moment awareness itself. And through this investigation, it can flash upon us. It's possible that spontaneously this flash of recognition happens, where we realize that we ourselves are awareness itself. Now, this does not mean that there are not thoughts. It doesn't mean that there's not a body. We're not in denial of ego or personality or belief or anything. This is not a denial of all these exterior elements, we could say, of our human self. We're actually finding out simply what is the essential nature of ourself. Bodies and minds and beliefs and feelings are like clothing that spirit puts on, or awareness puts on. And we're finding out what's underneath this clothing, what's underneath these exteriors. And it can be quite radical, quite transformative, to realize that you are not anything you ever thought you were. That you're not your beliefs, that you're not your personality, and you're not your ego. You're something other than that, something that remains and resides on the inside, on the innermost part of your being. Right now, for the moment, we're calling that awareness itself. And of course, the radical nature of this insight is not that awareness is something you possess or need to discipline or need to learn how to do. Awareness is actually what you are. That's the innermost of your being. Not only is awareness what you are, but awareness is also what everyone else is. Now, if this is trying to be understood in the mind, this is sort of such a leap that the mind can't make it. The mind can't really understand. It may accept it, or it may deny that you're awareness, but either way, it can't really understand. It cannot comprehend. Thought cannot comprehend what's beyond thought. So that's why we call this is a transcendent recognition, a transcendent revelation. It's actually our identity waking up from the prison of separation to its true state. And this is actually an extraordinarily simple recognition, but extraordinarily profound. It might come in the beginning for some people as just a very quick flash, almost like a flash of lightning, where it's suddenly recognized that you've actually always been this awareness that's been watching from the inside all along. You may have it as this very simple, very quick flash, and then it may seem to be gone. Or it may flash upon you and it may last for a longer period of time. For some people, it may flash within them and it may stay that way indefinitely, where they realize they're in the realization of their true nature indefinitely. But no matter how it comes, it's very important to realize that this is not something that the mind decides upon. This is a flash of revelation. And this is actually how to do meditative self-inquiry. As you've noticed, as I've gone through this inquiry, this is not something that happens simply in the mind. But mind is asking the question. Mind is also part of the observing. Mind is noticing that there are thoughts, but you are not your thoughts. So the mind and our inherent intelligence as a human being is not being asked to be put aside, as it sometimes is in spirituality. It's actually being engaged. Our inherent intelligence is being engaged in this process, of what I call subtraction, of subtracting or taking back our identity from thought, from ego, from personality, from belief, and allowing it to come back to its true resting place, which we'll call awareness itself. One of the most simple pointers I can give is to remember that all of this really takes place from the neck down. By that I mean, we may ask the question, what am I, or who am I, or am I this thought? Am I this belief? The question may originate in the mind, but it's very important that once we ask the question, we don't stay in the mind. And then we must go to the neck down. We have this whole beautiful thing called our body and this kinesthetic sense of being. And that's where actually inquiry really happens, in this kinesthetic sense of our being from the neck down. An example of that is when you ask yourself, what am I? If you're sensitive, what you realize for most people is the first thing they know is they don't know. They don't actually know who they are. And that's why most people will go into their minds and try to figure it out. But the first thing you know, what am I really, essentially, ultimately? The first thing your mind knows is that you don't know. Now, in spiritual inquiry, that's very useful information. I don't know what I am. I don't know who I am. Now, you can either think about that, or you can actually feel it. What's it like to feel in your body, in your being, that you don't know what you are? How does it feel? What's it like when you look inside to find out who you are and you don't find an entity called you? What's that space like that you feel? What's that open space like? And you feel it in your body. You let it register in the cells of your being. And this is real spiritual inquiry. This takes it from something that can be abstract in the mind to something that's actually very visceral and very kinesthetic and very spiritually powerful. Now, as I said before, it's also equally important to realize that although we're taking back or extracting our identity out of thought and feeling and personality, we're not denying or disassociating ourselves from thought or personality or belief. This is not a means of pushing anything away. This is simply a way of getting identity to wake up from the dream of separation. But even when it wakes up, there's still a body there. There's still a personality there. There's still a certain rudimentary ego structure there. The difference is once we've started to realize ourselves as awareness itself, our identity, who we are, is now resting in its essence. Who we are is no longer found in our body, mind, personalities, and thoughts and beliefs. Who we are rests in its source. And when we rest in our source, actually our bodies and minds and personalities and feelings come into a harmony. As soon as we extract our identity from them, our whole human experience starts the process of coming into a natural harmony. Harmony, what I mean by harmony is that we are not divided against ourselves. I think most human beings can easily recognize that often in the ego is actually defined by a certain inner divisiveness, where certain parts of our egos are at war or at odds with other parts of egos. We want to be somebody that we can't really be. We want to think thoughts that we can't really think. We want to appear ways that we don't actually appear. We want to be better than we actually are. So we have all these sort of conflicting ideas and feelings and emotions when our identity is caught up in the ego personality. And quite mysteriously, when we extract our identity from the egoic personality, the egoic personality comes into a harmony where all these forces, these psychic and emotional forces, aren't at odds with each other anymore. Of course, it may not immediately come into this harmony in the deepest possible way, but certainly the journey begins where, even on a human level, we come into a harmony of body and mind.
And you were just listening to Adyashanti, A-D-Y-A-S-H-A-N-T-I, Adyashanti. He's a very well-renowned meditation teacher, and you can find lots of his material at Sounds True. We were just listening to a segment from his audiobook, True Meditations, which included the segments Who is Aware and Transcendent Recognition. Again, that's Adyashanti. And I find that he's a very natural, real-world person in how he conveys the message of coming to that understanding of what meditation really is. It's not something woo-woo. It's not something, you know, unreachable. It's just basically allowing yourself to find, to open, to allow your true being to come through. And unfortunately, we come through life with programming from early childhood that separates us from that. We are there when we are born. As young children, we're completely connected. But as we integrate into the world, we lose that connection. And now is our opportunity to reestablish that connection to the true nature of our own being. Adyashanti. And I played that segment with accompanying music, again by Nadi. And it was a piece called The Path of Divine Love, and it's from his CD, The Triumph of Love, Meditations on Divine Love. Again, that's Nadi, N-A-D-I, and the CD is The Triumph of Love. I'm sure you can find out more about that. And just as a point of reference, our opening theme is called Frog Dancing by David Anthony Clark. And you can find that on the Spiritual High CD, as well as other places. I'm Catherine Davis. This is Heart of Mind Radio over PRN.FM. If you have some thoughts and you want to share them with myself and with our other listeners, you can call in at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. We don't have a great deal of time, but I would love to hear from you. And I would be really interested in knowing and what's going on with you right now. Have you been feeling that frustration over the last couple of weeks? Are you feeling that now? Or have you been able to touch that transcendent space? And I would really love to hear your thoughts on why you're experiencing this frustration, or maybe you can share what your experiences are with transformation. The number, again, is 888-874-4888. And you can alternatively send an email, and I'll be happy to read that email over the air next week. And you can reach me. I have a new email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. heartofmindradio@gmail.com. I'm working on building a new website with the same name, so there's a more direct connection between myself, you, and the program. heartofmindradio@gmail.com, and send some thoughts about what's happening with you and perhaps some insights, and we can share that with our audience here over PRN. I have another bit of information I want to share with you about this time period, the portal we're living in right now, and you can find this and other insightful material at the website thegoldenlightchannel.com, thegoldenlightchannel.com, and this comes from Gabriel, and it's interesting. As the vibrational frequency of the 1212 resonates, your macabre field is achieved. The macabre is a vehicle for your ascension as a light being in human form. The magnificent sacred geometry of the star tetrahedron will be achieved around, will be activated by the codes of the 1212 portal. So, of course, this happens every year. The star tetrahedron will create a powerful, shining, starry shield of light that holds the resonance of your soul's divine blueprint. The building of your makaba actually was completed on the solstice, December 21 of 2013. So that was a part of the activation process. And actually the 2012 activation was more about activating the 12 strands of DNA within your cells, and that opened the ways and opened up within your being the 12 chakra system. So at 2012, there was an activation which was really about connecting you with the whole of the what might be considered the Christ consciousness, the understanding of yourself as a divine being. And then 2013 was the opening of the portal of the Merkaba. And the Merkaba, what that means, Mer is means light, Ka means spirit, and Ba is the body. And so this is the structure of our awakened consciousness. And it allows the light body to empower the physical life so that you can thrive as a fully blended divine human being. So 2012 was the opening of consciousness. 2013 was the formation of the Merkaba. Rather, 2013 and 2014 is the activation of the union of that consciousness in your awareness. So it's a very powerful time. It's very important to be attentive to yourself, being very gentle with yourself, very loving with yourself, very forgiving with yourself, and to have gratitude for whatever the journey has been to bring you to the point of being alive on the planet at this very moment. It's a very powerful, activating time. Everyone will be impacted, whether they're conscious or not. Everyone will have an opportunity through their awareness to move through into a very alive, conscious awareness and connection and communication to their divine self. And through that, we are guided to move through our world in such a way that is beneficial not only to ourselves but to the collective, because we are living in this world as a human collective. We're a family, whether we recognize or realize that. And that family that we are is rooted in the divinity that we also are. And because that divinity is the oneness that created all of creation, created the solar system, created, you know, the universe solar system, created life on the planet, created our beings individually as we are born, we're all part of this one divine creation. But up until now, we've lived as separate from it, looking at everything as a separate thing or a separate vehicle or a separate identity. And we're at the point in time where we can experience, not only intellectually know, not only believe, but actually experience that divine union of ourselves and have that communication flow through within our being, bathing ourselves, bathing our consciousness, and flowing out into our life, helping us to manifest that which we desire and that which our blueprint, our soul's divine blueprint, the purpose that we've been brought into this world. So it's an exciting time. It's an active time, and we can engage in this process with ourselves, with each other. It's a wholeness and union of being. That is the age in which we're living. I invite you to connect with me through email, heartofmindradio@gmail.com, heartofmindradio@gmail.com. For those of you who want to connect, you can send an email or you can call 347-480-1694. I offer meditation classes for that experience, for that group deliverance and growth and upliftment. It's a beautiful thing. And you can find out more about that. And I also provide individual work, consultation, as well as energy transmission. So I'm actively engaged in this process through information, through meditation, through one-on-one. And you can connect with all of that by calling 347-480-1694 or through email to heartofmindradio@gmail.com. I also want to encourage you to go to the prn.fm website. You can find out more information about the show. You can make a donation to the Progressive Radio Network. Become a sustaining member of the network. It's an important station, and it's transforming the world. I encourage you to support the Progressive Radio Network. And you could also go to iTunes, favorite the show, Heart of Mind Radio, help us spread the word. And I offer you a sense of gratitude and appreciation for your listening, tuning in, and participating in the show in this way. So thank you and stay tuned. We'll be back next Friday, 10 a.m., Heart of Mind Radio, PRN.FM. And coming up, stay tuned for more great programming. And we'll be back.